When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul, what's happening?
Not much. What's happening with you, Mr.
Not Absentee? Not a whole lot, really. Hanging out, doing a comic book podcast. I mean, does it get better than that? I don't think so.
Nope, absolutely not. Yeah, we have had quite an interesting summer of delays and various things happening. So we haven't put out as many episodes as we normally would have, but we will rectify that starting now. Today on the program, we will be discussing the 2003 Elseworlds miniseries Superman Red Sun, written by Mark Miller with art by Dave Johnson. But first, there's something happening in the world of comics we would like to discuss, and that is the reported rumor of, get ready, a Black Batman.
Gasp!
Gasp! Oh no! If you listen very intently to the wind, you can hear a bunch of grown-up babies crying.
The insults are revolting.
No, you've been paying more attention to this than I have, Brian. Do you know more of the details of what exactly the reported Black Batman is going to be?
Well, I mean, again, like to clarify and probably clarify and clarify again. This is just, right now, this is just rumor, but it seems to be, it's being reported by most of the major comic book sites and whatnot, so.
Well, it's probably true. I mean, I don't see anything,
it seems
any
like
reason for it not to be. Yeah.
It seems like, at least from, like, what I've seen out there is that DC is finally going to shift Bruce Wayne out of Batman. Now, they've done this before.
Many times.
Many times. So this is not new and... You know, if they attempt to promise us, you know, this is the status quo forever going forward until the end of all time, I think we can all, like, collectively be suspicious of that.
Yes, the Bat mantle has been passed many times.
And personally, I like the idea. I like the idea of, you know, retiring Bruce Wayne. He's been Batman for 1,000 issues or however many years. My math is bad right now.
Bat math.
To use my batulator to...
Batulator. Isn't that what you...
Everything's better when you put bat in front of it, isn't it?
Yes. When you eat raw chicken, you get batulism.
I'd rather have a bat in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
It can just keep going on and on and on.
It could. We could do a whole podcast. Maybe we should. So I don't know. I mean, I guess the idea is that he's going to retire for good. There's some different reporting that maybe the DC Universe will think that he's dead, but he's really just hanging out in the background or hidden somewhere away, like, you know, guiding the new Batman or whoever takes up the mantle. But I guess the big turn of events is that it will most likely be an African-American person taking over the mantle.
So it's being reported that it's Luke Fox.
Luke Fox seems to be the person that most folks are thinking is going to be the one. That's the son of Lucius Fox, of course. And it makes sense a little bit because Luke Fox is, as Batwing, probably he makes a lot of sense. Like the training and his use of gadgetry and things like that seem to like fit it within the Batman aesthetic. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think why not?
Yeah, it's a new wrinkle on an old story. I mean, Essentially, this is just Batman Beyond.
Right.
You know, Bruce Wayne will probably be an old curmudgeon guiding the new Batman, like Oracle, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. It's just a new way to open up new stories and do something a little bit different with a well-worn premise. And, you know... It's going to go back to status quo. It's going to go back to status quo eventually because there will be an inevitable crisis of crisisness and everything will get rebooted again.
Yeah. And again, that's fine. And it's fine if Bruce Wayne is never Batman again. I mean, people will complain about everything. I mean, and I'll complain about everything sometimes, but at the end of the day, it's okay for legacy characters to be replaced by other people. And it's okay if those other people don't look or have the same gender as the people they're replacing.
Exactly.
And, you know, one of the arguments is, well, just create new characters. I was like, well, you can create new characters too. It's,
yeah. Look what happened when Miles Morales took over for Spider-Man. You know, there was a backlash of that as well. But he's turned out to be one of the most beloved characters in the franchise. So
I just, the stupidity of this sort of rigid stupidity of things always have to be just like I remember them, and you can't change it, you can't do that. You know, shut up.
Yeah, but even more than Marvel, stupid. DC has a history of legacy characters, of people taking over various mantles. So,
right,
you know, this is just another example of that. It's fine. You know, it's all fine.
Show me on the doll where this hurts you. There will always be crybabies.
And, yeah.
You know, and if it doesn't work, if the stories are poorly told, well, that's a different thing altogether. But
trying something new is not a bad thing.
And trying something new with the same old is even better.
I guess to finish off this conversation, change is okay. We're allowed to do new things. I've kind of trailed off Batman, reading Batman as of late. Maybe this will be something that'll bring me back in.
Sure. Why not? Yeah. Or at least give it a try. You know.
Yeah, try new things.
Ideally, they'll be able to do this transition without having to restart the numbering at number one.
But why would you want to not start at number one? It makes it so much easier to know where to start.
Right. Every time you have a new character or a new writer, just start over at number one. Then you have 15 volumes of... All right. That's a different conversation that I think we've actually had a little bit in the past as well. So
we have had that conversation before. It's mostly you shaking your fist at the sky.
I can't believe no one ever listens to me on these and follows my advice.
I have nothing to add to this conversation other than it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people.
Well, there you go.
So, on today's program, we will be discussing, as I said, Red Son, which is an alternate version of Superman. But it turns out, Brian, that there are other alternate versions of Superman, or Superman analogs, that have been used in comics. Yes. It's almost as if he's an immensely popular character and people like to try new things with it.
Or you could say arguably the single most important character created in terms of the existence of comics now.
I absolutely agree with that. He's Superman.
Yeah, I know.
What Brian and I have decided to do is talk about some of the characters that are kind of Superman analogs that have, not necessarily our favorites, but ones that we've been intrigued by. And I'll let you go first, Brian.
Well, this time I kept my list down to the required three.
Woohoo!
So probably in ascending order, let's go with descending order. I'd say at number one, I would have Robert Kirkman's Invincible. At number two, I might do Supreme, particularly the Alan Moore version of Supreme. And then at number three, I think, you know, it, obviously one has to go with Super Duper Man from Mad Comics.
It seems kind of obvious why you chose those, but why Invincible?
I think Invincible is, besides the fact that it's, I think, a fresh take on it, you know, he's not just a straight, I mean, he's an alien, as was his father, and there are similarities, but I think Kirkman took that comic, and it starts off as kind of this fun, sort of lighter type comic, and then Kirkman took it to some very dark places, and I think he definitely made it his own. And I was kind of sad when the series ended, because I was along for the entire ride.
I always appreciated the fact that it went in real time. There was no sliding time scale.
Right. Yeah.
And they aged in real time and so forth. That's unique for comic books.
And I felt it's almost the Spider-Man effect, where Invincible was a relatable character, not just to anyone, but also relatable to younger readers in a way that some of the other Superman analogs just were not. Like Supreme is not, you know, Supreme started off as a very violent sort of character, and he stayed violent, but I think Alan Moore, when Alan Moore took over Supreme, he made it more, I guess, Silver Age feel to it.
Yeah. That's when Alan Moore was doing all his, everything had to be Silver Age.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I thought, a nicer tribute to Superman. That seems weird to say, to use Supreme and the word nicer. But it was a more compelling homage, I guess, to Superman than I think some of the like Marvel type, you know, Marvel spent their entire existence trying to create a Superman. And while some of those characters ended up being compelling on their own, they were not, I felt, as compelling as Superman analogs. So, and Super Duperman is just Super Duperman, and there can be no arguing.
it would be mad to try. It would
be mad to argue, yes.
Yes. So the ones I have chosen are to speak to what you were just talking about, Marvel trying to create a Superman analog. It's the Sentry. Well, I'll just give you my list. The Sentry, the Plutonian, and Wondar, the Sky Being. So the reason I like the Sentry, at least in the original Paul Jenkins version, is that he kind of acknowledges the fact that Marvel doesn't have a Superman. And it's a very clever way of trying to invent why. Originally, the way the story goes is that the Sentry's in the original Marvel he was the first Marvel superhero, but goes insane. So everyone in the world has to have their memories wiped so that they don't remember him. And that's why Marvel doesn't have a Superman. I always thought that was a clever idea. And at least the original, like I said, the original Paul Jenkins kind of miniseries crossover was really good. He has since, I mean, it's hard to do anything with him after you have that initial premise of people need to forget him.
And there are people who really dislike that character.
Yes. And I, you know, in later iterations, I can understand why. But I was always intrigued by the original run. The second is the Plutonian from Irredeemable, the Mark Waid series from Boom.
Which I have not read.
Oh, well, it's another take on what if Superman, but bad. But okay. because it's Mark Waid, you know, he's so full of nostalgia and loves those old characters. Instead of coming from a place of hate, which some other writers do, he comes from a place of love. So he makes the Plutonian kind of a bad guy and doing bad things, but despite the name Irredeemable, he actually does attempt to redeem him at the end. I won't go any further than that because it's actually a quite a good series that I recommend. Perhaps we'll do it on a podcast.
I was going to say, perhaps that shall be a recommendation.
And the final one is Wondar the Sky Being. That is a creation by Steve Gerber in his height of just madness in the 70s. It is a character that first appeared in the Man-Thing comic, but later went on to feature in Fantastic Four and other places. The premise is there's a planet that's going to explode, so a mother and father put their child into a rocket, which gets shot off. But instead of landing in a field in Kansas, it passes right over Kansas and lands in a swamp. And that baby is stuck in that capsule until adulthood because he can't get out. So he emerges from this capsule as with all the powers of Superman, but with the mentality of a baby. And hilarity ensues.
I can only imagine. I'm sure no drugs were involved in the creation of this.
A common misconception. Steve Gerber was completely insane all on his own without the use of external influences. He was one of the few people at Marvel at the time not doing excessive amounts of drugs. He just came up with crazy stuff all on his own.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that there's so many... There's so many people who have tried to do various takes on Superman because of his importance to comics.
Right.
Most of the time, it's what if Superman but bad, which I kind of think is the easy way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making Superman good. That's kind of a harder take, but I think it's probably the best one.
Right. Well, I think Superman has always been problematic to write. It's why you have, like, our comic today, The Red Sun, and other sort of more notable Superman stories are the ones that it's hard to come up with a unique and interesting storyline with Superman or a unique and interesting take on Superman because he's, you know, mostly indestructible. You know, very good writers have struggled mightily to write compelling Superman stories. And so when they are really good, it becomes notable.
Well, it's easy for people to imagine someone with infinite power, you know, abusing that power. I mean, that's the easy way to go. It's difficult to imagine someone with infinite power being infinitely benevolent.
Right.
I think Morrison got that, and various writers over the years got that. But I think Superman as a beacon of hope is much more resilient of a character.
Right. And I think we can't, the one Superman analog that I think also deserves a shout out is, you know, how could we forget Bizarro?
Oh, of course.
And poor, sad Bizarro.
Yeah. We'll see a version of Bizarro in the comic we're talking about today.
Yes, we will.
So on that note, why don't we take a break and then come back with some, an alternate version of Superman, comrade.
I am Connor from the House of El.
And I am Ray from the House of Zod.
We are two of the many, many survivors of Krypton's destruction, and we have made our home in Australia, and dare I say, have become Australians, for better or worse. But we have also decided to read Superman comics, read Superman books, watch Superman shows, cartoons, movies, basically everything Superman, and from an Australian perspective as well. Whether you're a seasoned fan, like me,
or whether you are coming in fresh, wide-eyed, and wanting to learn more like me, then this podcast is for you. Join us for our bi-weekly adventures available on all good podcast catchers.
So just search for Last Sons of Krypton, a Superman podcast. We'll be coming to you from Australia or some cosmic dimension, wherever we are that week.
Up, and away!
And we're back. Brian, this is your recommendation, so tell us all about it.
I will. I shall. I can. Superman Red Sun was a 3-issue limited series published in 2003 as part of DC's Elseworlds imprint. Written by Mark Miller with art by Dave Johnson, it imagines a world in which the baby Superman landed in the Soviet Union rather than the United States. Miller crafts a high-concept, if occasionally clunky, parable of intrigue and politics, positing how a Russian Superman's effect on the world would be vastly altered from the narrative we have come to accept from an American or capitalistic Man of Steel. With Lex Luthor still serving as Superman's arch-nemesis, the story tracks the rise and fall of the Man of Steel, from Soviet hero and face of a global communist government, to authoritarian dictator, to eventual sacrificial savior. Along the way, the Red Sun encounters the Russian Batman, Wonder Woman, and even Hal Jordan. There are several neat callbacks to existing in-continuity Superman history, as well as some fun cameos. Various characters, particularly Jimmy Olsen, are significantly reimagined. All these things serve towards a fantastical world-building and a resolution that is both satisfying and bittersweet. The ending is a nifty turn on causality looping, mostly plain straight, but with a bit of a nudge and wink. So I kind of saved a lot of the description, you know, that's a very generic intro, but I kind of saved, there's a lot to talk about. I didn't want to hit on all those notes in the intro. So obviously this was my recommendation. Paul, you were reading this. Do you have any initial thoughts, feelings?
I do. I mean, all right. So first of all, I do like this story. I think it's as far as Mark Miller is concerned, it's one of the better Mark Miller stories out there.
Not one of your favorite writers.
No, not one of my favorite writers. And we'll probably get into the reasons why, but I do want to say, yes, I do like this. I do appreciate that it's a unique take on Superman. It's a very interesting premise, and it's very clever in the way that it's done. I do have some, it's not complaints really, I guess questions. Levels? Questions. I have questions about, intentionality. About the author's intention. I have questions about the author.
As do I. Yeah. So,
yes. So there you go. That's my initial thing is overall, yes, I do like it. And we'll get into some of the details of why I like it. And I guess we'll get into some of the details of, or I'll ask some of my questions. But first, I mean, you chose this. So was there a reason behind choosing this particular story?
Well, and I think in keeping with what you had said, this is, again, and I think we reiterate this every week, but it doesn't hurt to, if someone's listening to us for the first time, a lot of the stuff that we recommend is stuff that we have read at some point in our lives. And in many cases, these are stories that we haven't read in some time. I usually don't pick things that are new or particularly fresh in my memory. I do that for a lot of reasons, partly or mainly because the way then that we could approach this is a reminder or a learning or, you know, a learning moment for us as you, Paul, and I, not just the listeners. And also it is because certain stories come in with certain reputations, and my memory of that story might maybe, like we had with The Boys a couple podcasts ago, my memory of said story ends up being vastly different than my experience of the story now, which I know is very reader response in some ways, but I also have a different way of thinking about reading now than I did 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, what have you.
Yeah. Well, so, perspectives change and, you know, our opinions change and, you know, we grow up a little bit. So, you know, seeing a story with fresh eyes and a different perspective is valid. And I think it's worthwhile to do that.
Right. And I think it's great because you pick things sort of in the same way, and you've picked things that I haven't read, which I really like, because that's also a great way for me to read some stories that I might have ignored in the past. Okay. So that said, that sort of long extrapolation only to get to your question, which is, I pick this because, as you referenced, I believed the hype. Because this, a lot of people hold this up as like one of the great Superman stories. And I think we touched on like how difficult it is to have what you would consider a great Superman story. Initially, I was going to go with All-Star Superman. But that is not a single podcast series.
Yeah. That might be a little mini series that we have to do.
Right. Yeah. To my mind, especially after reading Red Sun, that still stands as, in my world, as the Superman story. But I was like, okay, Red Sun is supposed to be right up there with it. So I was like, let's recommend this. Let's go back and reread this and see what I think. That said, all of that now, it's certainly better than a lot of the generic single issue in continuity Action Comics Superman, whatever series is currently, you know, starring Superman at various times. I feel like this is certainly more interesting than a lot of those. I don't think it holds a candle to All-Star Superman. That said, I think it's really, really, really interesting in what Mark Miller was trying to do, which, again, I am with you. I'm not 100% certain what his intentions are with this story. But from a generic storytelling standpoint, it's a lot of fun.
Yes, I agree with that.
Batman is awesome.
And yeah, he moves pretty quickly.
He does.
Russian Batman.
Yes.
I do want to clarify before we get into this. You know, I've mentioned many times on the show, and I don't like Mark Miller. That's not to say that I think he's a bad writer. It's just the opposite. I actually think he's quite a good writer. He's very clever. He comes up with unique and interesting ideas. I don't particularly like those ideas all the time.
Well, and in some ways, I made a half-hearted Public Enemy reference earlier, and I'll make another one. Mark Miller is sort of the Flavor Flav of comics. He's the ultimate hype man.
Oh yeah, he's Stan Lee without the lovability
and the mustache.
Yes, he is quite the hype man, and no one loves Mark Miller stories more than Mark Miller.
Right.
But that's, well, again, I just want to clarify. I do think he's a good writer, and I do think he does come up with interesting ideas. I'm not always on board with those ideas. I can mention his depiction of Captain America is just wrong to me.
Are you talking the Ultimates Captain America?
The Ultimates Captain America. Yeah. It is the antithesis of everything that character stands for.
Well, in his defense, I mean, wasn't that the point?
Again, I mean, if he was like I said, no, I understand the idea behind it, and I understand why he did those things. I think that's the wrong way to take it. I didn't appreciate it. I didn't like it. And that's my opinion. I did not like it personally. And I could say that about a lot of his stories and things that he's written. But again, that doesn't make him bad. Because I don't like him doesn't make him a bad writer. I just want to clarify, in this world of if I don't like it, it's bad, kind of criticism. I don't want to take it at that.
We both had a whole lot of caveats for a story. I think that at the end we probably both enjoyed for the most part.
Exactly. because we are going to tear into it a little bit at the end.
I think, and that's what we do. You know,
we're the world of criticism right now is so toxic and fraught with problems that I feel like I really have to clarify everything before I start to say something.
Right. Well, and
so the people aren't just thinking that I'm just shitting on something just to shit on it, which is
of course. Then we have our episodes where we can't think of anything bad to say about, you know, say.
Yeah. And I think that's okay too. Okay, but this story overall, like I said, it is a really ingenious premise.
Right. It's taking what you know, because you had referenced earlier, like, you know, a lot of the common ideas with Superman to make him interesting is to make him bad.
Right.
And so this takes that sort of idea, but it doesn't really make him bad. Okay, the middle arc, he's kind of bad.
But in the beginning, in that first issue, the first part of the first arc, Miller kind of gets what makes Superman great. It shows him being a world savior, not just, I mean, he's based in the USSR and he's working for Stalin, but he's still going around the world saving people and doing what's right. That's what Superman is, whether he's working for the president or he's working for a totalitarian leader in the Soviet Union. So Miller isn't just saying, oh, he's evil.
Right.
At least not at first.
And you really don't ever get the sense that Superman is evil, even in the middle arc where sort of takes over. Basically takes over the world, but he does it bloodlessly. And because he is following in the ideals that he was raised with, in the same way that Superman, the Superman that was born in the United States, is following the ideals and principles of the United States, even when some of those principles are morally sketchy.
Yes, I mean, and I this is actually one of the bits that I think is clever, is that in the 1970s, you had Superman working with Richard Nixon, a morally sketchy individual.
Right.
You know, so we're coming from an American-centric position, so we always say, oh yeah, truth, justice in the American way. I'm curious, because I don't know what the perspective of someone reading a Superman comic in Soviet Russia at the time, how they would have perceived that. Would they be looking at it with the eyes that we see Superman standing next to Stalin?
And it's hard to tell. Well, I mean, that gets into a whole lot of real world stuff. How accessible were comics, a nation, a country, a block of countries that you couldn't even get jeans in or rock and roll? So everything was black market. So were Superman comics a popular black market item?
I don't know. But I do appreciate the fact that Miller is kind of taking this idea, you know, this imagined alternate world and taking it to logical conclusions. That's actually very clever.
And I think a lot of I said clunky, and I think sometimes the timing of things and some of the dialogue is a little clunky, but it does seem like a natural progression. The most part. Now, the fact that Stalin's many, many crimes are sort of glossed over in the comic.
Yes, they are. I mean,
And, you know, Superman's just, he doesn't, they're mentioned, but almost in passing. And there doesn't seem to be any moral, Superman himself doesn't, and for the record, he is not named. His human name, his alter ego, which would be, is never named. He's never given a Clark Kent type Russian name in this. So I think that's really interesting and probably important. But, you know, so when we just say Superman, it's because he has no alter ego name, I guess.
And I personally think that is incredibly important. And I think he did that intentionally.
Right.
Because, you know, the version of Superman that we know, Clark Kent is essential to who Superman is. The reason Superman is so good and great is because he's also Clark Kent. He's a god trying to be human. So no, I do think that that's an incredibly important detail.
But you know, there he is, Superman, just standing around with Lenin and following his orders and
Stalin.
Lenin. sorry.
Maybe he met John. It's the right timing, so he could have met John.
Right. He could. Yes. Yeah, standing around with Stalin and talking with him as, you know, sort of man to man or person to person or
Stalin's almost like a father figure to him.
Right. And it seems like Superman has no sort of moral questioning about how Stalin came to power and how Stalin treated many of his people.
Right. I mean, Batman, the Russian Batman does kind of bring that up at certain
right.
points. But yes, there is a definite moral ambiguity. I mean, Stalin sort of takes the Pa Kent role, which is questionable. I don't know how intentional that's supposed to be, but this gets into, you know, the intention of the author. What is the point that he's making? I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that right now, but...
Sure, I mean, it's...
Well, is he trying to say that power corrupts? Or, like if he's saying that power corrupts... I mean, Luther seems to be all powerful in his own way, but he doesn't get corrupted. He does.
Except
kill
people. Luther. Well, so Luther is a fascinating. I kind of love what Miller does with Luther in this, because Luther is also a murderer. You know, he kills his own people. He states over and over and over again that he doesn't actually, like, even in towards the end when he is saving the United States and bringing it out of, you know, the sort of horrible state that the country is in, as the lone country holding out against Superman's communism, he even states, like, he's not doing it for the people.
Yeah, he flat out says he hates them.
Yeah, he's doing it just to get at Superman.
Yeah.
And it works.
But so what is the point of that kind of thing, that no one in power has your best interest at hand, it's kind of like, even if you benefit from this dictatorial power.
And they're both dictatorial because Luther eventually becomes a dictator as well, or a dictator not in name, but certainly in every practice.
Yeah, I mean, Luther does control everyone because he has all the calculations, everything's planned out to a decimal point. So he has all the idea. He knows exactly what he's going to do, and he knows exactly how people are going to react. Because that's another thing that the text tells us, that people, you know, they want to be free to make their own mistakes. You have to have human failings just are needed to progress in society. Right. But all of Luther's manipulation is still controlling everyone. Even if you think you're free, you're not.
Right.
It's really confusing to me. What is Miller trying to say?
And I'm wondering, and I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there is an answer to that. And I wonder if, because I think Miller is smart, and I'm not sure he wanted, I don't want to get into where I'm trying to decide the author's intent on things, because, and by intent, I don't mean every author has an intent to tell a story. Some authors have intent to be more message oriented, and some authors are just, you know, my intent is just to tell a story without different authors have different approaches to why they're writing a story and what they include.
I don't want to get into what was that person thinking. At the same time, having read other works by Miller, he is a man who is intentional in his writing, and he has something that he wants to get across. And that's why I'm not trying to say this is what he meant. I'm trying to analyze the text and try to figure out what did he mean, you know, because the other thing you could think of is it nature versus nurture? Is it because of Superman's Soviet upbringing and his devotion to Stalin that he inevitably becomes a totalitarian dictator? But in that case, I mean, the same thing when you see him in the beginning and he's helpful to the world. And he sort of rejects Stalin's ideology, at least in the beginning. So if it's just a straight up nature versus nurture, then Superman should have always been bad. And there should have been no redeeming arc at the end.
And it doesn't explain Luther.
And it does not explain Luther at all. So like I said, I have questions about this story.
It's almost, I think there is a very kind of strong strain of cynicism.
Oh, you think so?
But I think that is part of it. So, you know, when you're asking the intention and what have you, I don't want to put Mark Miller in the same realm as Frank Miller in terms of does Frank Miller, you know, because you think Frank Miller hates all his characters. And I don't think Mark Miller hates Superman, but I think that I'm trying to think how to put this. I think that he is suspicious of Superman.
He's suspicious of people with
suspicious of power.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's suspicious of power, and he's suspicious of a character who has unlimited power. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think he is really just telling a story about this is what could have happened, and whether it is nature versus nurture, that certainly is very much a part of it, but I don't think it's the be-all, end-all of it.
Yeah. The thing that I get from it is an
exploration of what happens when something that is ideally uniquely a force for good uses that good in that force for what is perceived as good in one way and perceived as evil or bad in another way. I'm not sure there's much, I'm not sure how much deviance outside of that there really is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I kept taking away from it was that he thinks, or he's saying that Superman is neither good nor evil, but completely a product of that environment and that social conditioning that he was a part of. But by saying that, he's also saying, by extension, all people are neither good or evil, but just a product of their environment and social conditioning. And that's deeply cynical.
Yes.
You know, so one of the things that I admire and appreciate about the character of Superman is that he is inherently good and does what is right because it's the right thing to do. And kind of Miller's kind of pulling that away from him.
Except he is doing what he thinks is right throughout the entire...
He overlooks things. He's able, like we were talking about with Stalin, you know, it's pointed out to him several times and he just sort of hand waves it. Well, that was someone else. And
or
it was another time, but I know what I'm doing is a little bit morally gray, but it's for the greater good.
Right. And, you know, like he can't understand, like at some point he has the entire world now under his control. And by control is a little tricky, but you know, he's the president of the world.
Yeah. And he's ruling by fear.
Except for the United States.
Yeah. And it should be noted, he is ruling by fear. People are afraid of what he can do.
Right.
And that's why they stay in line.
Is it just fear? Because I think it's also, you know, you when you feed the people.
Yeah, they do mention how, you know, all the women love him and so forth.
Right. When people have food on their table, when people are employed, when they want for nothing, you know, that's a different type of, you know, our hierarchy of needs are being met, then it's not just fear. Yes, I mean, everybody is afraid. You know, you have that soldier talking about, you know, Superman is listening and everything and how
he can hear everybody at all times.
Right. So yes, fear is there, but you're also having all your basic needs met.
So it's okay if the trains run on time?
Yes. I'm saying yes in context, not as a personal philosophy.
Yes. Again, deeply cynical worldview. And I think that's what just I kept coming back to, reading this story and saying, this is really clever and it's really entertaining, but there's just that nagging feeling of, this is just wrong on a certain level.
And he doesn't treat, there's a lot of folks that do not get great treatment in this comic. You know, Lois Lane / Lois Luthor. Should be noted that Lois Lane is married to Lex Luthor. While certainly having some sympathetic aspects to her character, there's some kind of dark, shady stuff, in going on with her as well. Jimmy Olsen is a government lackey.
Yeah, and he ends up, is it running the CIA at one point? Yeah.
Well, and then he's vice president under Luther. So
I could actually see Jimmy Olsen being a government lackey.
But it turns out he's kind of slick, and he knows what Luther's up to. He knows that Luther is killing his own people when they beat him at chess. Or not beat him at chess, but
lose at chess,
or when he just finally gives up working at Star Labs and has all of the people who know anything about what he was doing killed.
Luther's a little shady, you have to say.
Yeah.
And, another thing about Lois is Lois knows all this stuff as well, but she still stays with him and she still attempts to have a relationship with him, even though she's supposed to be this, Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist. And right. She still kind of turns a blind eye to Luther's machinations. And that gets into a message as well. We know how terrible Luther is. We know that he doesn't do this for the greater good, but it does benefit humankind. So I don't know.
It's like Superman is doing it because he thinks it benefits the greater good. Luther is doing it because it benefits him.
Yeah. And it accidentally benefits the greater good.
Right. So in some ways they're the exact characters we've always known, except just playing on different sides. Well, they're not. They both were, Luther was American as well. I think these are interesting juxtapositions. And I think that in some ways, Miller wrote himself into a corner with some of these things. I think that he just wrote himself out of the corner by ignoring the corner that he wrote himself into.
No, he got out of it with what every good person who writes himself into a corner does. Time travel. which I mean, I'm joking, of course. I actually thought that ending was pretty clever.
Yeah,
and the fact that that Luther's name evolves over a millennia to just be L, so Kal-El.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Luther essentially creates Superman, which then the causality loop, what you talked about in the synopsis,
right?
Very clever. I did read an interview with Grant Morrison, who said that he gave his good friend Mark Miller that idea.
I think I read that as well, and that makes perfect sense.
Yes,
way more Grant Morrison.
Yes,
idea than it would have been a Mark Miller idea, but which also surprised me when I got to the end. And I was like, oh, I forgot about this, because the ending of it for folks listening is. It's all kind of, Luther saves the world, Luther cures cancer and AIDS, and then cures disease, eliminates the need to sleep.
Everybody lives to be 800 years old.
And then
president for a millennium.
Yeah. And then as we go further and further into the future, as Paul mentioned, the names start changing slightly. You're like, some of these names sound familiar, they almost have the same construction as, and then you get to the end and spoiler alert, so our Earth now has a red sun which is about to destroy Earth, and Kal-El, the ancient relative or the relative of Luther, sends his son, or I'm sorry, Jor-El sends his son Kal-El back in time to save the world. And of course, Kal-El goes back in time and lands in a field in the Ukraine. And then, so there's your causality loop.
I understand why he did it. So it's a complete loop. I thought when I first read this, that it was going to go back and he lands in Kansas.
I wondered that too. And then part of me was stopping and going, wait, was this Earth or was this Krypton this whole time? Because I was trying to, because it threw me briefly. I was like, have I been reading? And I was trying to think, did they ever strictly say this was Earth throughout the comic? And they do, and it's Earth. And, but I thought it would have been an even neater trick if it turned out that this had been Krypton.
I thought the same thing.
Parallel, yeah.
Yeah, for a moment I thought the same thing. Like, oh, this is going to be really clever because this is actually Krypton. That's why you mentioned that this is definitely a Morrison idea. Mm-hmm. Had it been Morrison, that child would have split up into multiple dimensions. Where,
right.
Where every possibility happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, ultimately, I think we both have some quibbles, though, with some of the messaging, specifically like philosophical, political messaging. Do we both think it's a little bit muddied, or is that what I got from what you were saying? Or are you confident that there was more intent?
I think he had an intent, but I don't know what that intent is. Mm-hmm. Because if I look at it from a straightforward message, it seems pretty fascistic. Mm-hmm. You know, if we just believe in our divine intelligent leader, then all our wars will go away and all our diseases will be cured and we'll live forever. And that's not really the best message.
Nope.
No. But again, I'm not sure if that was the intent or if that was just a byproduct of where the story went.
If one of our thousands of listeners has a different take on this, by all means, let us know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is a great one to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, what is meant in this story? Because, you know, you have the Batman character who wears a furry cowl, which I like a lot.
And I actually want to go ahead with what you were going to say. And I have some interesting thoughts on the Batman.
Okay. Well, you know, when you look at that Batman, he is definitely a revolutionary leader, mm-hmm. who's trying to take down the fascist government. And when the government falls, it's all the people who were trying to be Batman who actually take over and rescue the country.
Right.
That's an interesting take on Batman as well. But yeah. What were you going to say?
But it's kind of a typical take on, you know, because Batman, the character who always is, you know, in the shadows and is a loner, is one of the least loner of superheroes out there.
Right.
With his extended Bat family and, you know, Bat Cow. But so you know, that is kind of almost, and you know, you have in Dark Knight, you know, where it's the herd of you know, his the gang members who all adopt the Batman persona, who end up helping Batman save the day. But what I found interesting about the Batman v Superman in Russia was their roles being reversed in some ways, because it's Superman who in Russia has his eye on everybody, has all the cameras and is listening in on everybody and has all of this stuff. And it's Batman who is fighting against that. Well, in the quote unquote real world of, you know, the proper DC universe, it's Batman who's spying on everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you look at the Nolan films, there's that questionable line of, it's okay for him to spy on everybody's because he's the good guy. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, that's not a good message at all.
Yeah. It's Batman who has kind of those fascist tendencies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're right. That is an interesting take, because if you think about it, Superman, with his hearing and vision and all his superpowers, he is a one-man surveillance state.
Yeah.
You know, and that's again, another clever take.
But he opts not to, like in the proper DCU, for the most part. I mean,
for the most part.
But it's Batman who is probably more likely to set up a totalitarian government.
Yeah, or at least an oligarchy with all the money. Yeah.
Right, right.
I do, like I said, I do appreciate what Miller is doing here. He's crafting it's a very well-crafted story. And he's obviously thought this through quite a bit, at least initially, to get the whole thing set up. It does end rather abruptly, I thought.
Yeah, there is a little
Hand waving at the end.
Yeah, I think when you're writing a limited series and with a limited amount of page space, and I think you see this with a lot of writers, even really good ones do this when they're writing shorter arcs, is your ideas are bigger than your page count, and you don't realize that until you're in the last arc.
Yeah, kind of could have needed another issue.
Everything is front-ended, and then you're writing longer than you have space for, and then you start running out of space. It's
yep.
All right, time to wrap things up.
Yeah,
it's like every Star Trek The Next Generation episode.
Quick, Geordi, explain what happened.
You just set up this massive problem, and then you realize you've got a minute to solve it.
Well, all I have to do is reverse the polarity of the neutron flow, and everything's okay. But yeah, I mean, and the other bit I thought was a little hand waving was the fact that Brainiac is in this story as well.
Right.
Yeah. So Brainiac, which we think is working for Superman, but actually has been kind of manipulating Superman. So it's almost as if in the last page, it's haha, you know, it's a Scooby-Doo moment where he takes his mask off and I've been running things actually.
And then, you know, Lex Luthor supposedly, I've known this all along. I planned this 40 years ago to the decimal point.
But he was off by one decimal point.
Which, of course, he was, but wasn't.
Or was he?
Well played, old friend.
That kind of annoyed me when I was reading this. It was like, ugh. Because everything that happened, Luthor was like, I planned that. No, right. You didn't. If you had really... Because he keeps creating supervillain after supervillain to try to take down Superman. And it doesn't work. If you had planned that, just go for the... If you know what's going to happen, just do it right away instead of waiting for decades for it to come right to fruition.
You know, well, it's...
But then there wouldn't be a story.
I could also see that sort of mind working to manipulate things so that for maximum effect.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the trope of, like, I meant to get captured.
Right. I could see particularly Luthor is a character that's always played the long game. Well, not always. I mean... For being the most brilliant man on earth, he also has, throughout the history of comics, done incredibly stupid things. But
yeah, like wear purple and green. I mean, who does that?
I know, right?
If he was really so brilliant, he'd design a better outfit. But overall, I mean, there's lots of little... Mark Miller knows his stuff. Mm-hmm. There's lots of callbacks and cameos, like you mentioned. The Sylvana cameo is fantastic, I think.
Yeah, yes.
He's just a sniveling little sycophant.
The Ma Kent cameo was kind of nice, but also funny. And again, but that's a very little moment. So, you know, it's just her having a dialogue with a neighbor. It's one or two panels, I think, you know. And I don't even, I think she is referred to as Mrs. Kent.
She is, because there's the Kent hardware store, and she...
Right, right.
And she does...
And she's so happy Jonathan wasn't around to see this.
Right.
And, you know, but she talks about, like, you know, she references, like, how you know, a child should be raised. There's something about child rearing.
Yeah.
Or how Superman should have, you know, and it's just kind of a funny moment. But she's also, like, you know, this Superman is terrible.
Yeah, and again, you know, that's... That Pa Kent, you know, we talked about Pa Kent, the Stalin taking over the Pa Kent role. Mm-hmm. That's really important to Superman's origin story.
Yeah.
The fact that Jonathan Kent dies and Superman can't save him, that's essential to his character. That he knows that he can't save everyone, but he can do what's right. Or save as many people as he can.
Yes.
So without that, you know, that's just a couple of panels. Miller does mention, look, this, like, you know, stabilizing influence is gone. What happens now?
I like, there's another great, there's a bunch of these. I'm just mentioning a couple of them to show, like, some of the more enjoyable aspects. I like this comic a lot. When Perry White is listening to, like, the Russian broadcast about Superman, and it's all that hyperbole, just like was used in America for Superman.
Exactly. And
Perry White's like, who writes this crap?
Yeah. Like I said, he does know his history. He understands Superman to a certain extent.
And I assume you appreciated Great Caesar's bust.
Yes. Great Caesar's ghost. It's actually his bust. I think we should bring back Great Caesar's ghost.
I have used Great Caesar's ghost in real life. Still.
So it's still not catching on, huh?
No, for some reason. Usually I just get strange looks. Or stranger looks.
Well, that's just because you scream it on the subway with no context.
Well, there is that. But, you know, it's that's no different than most of what happens on the subway. So I think one real quick side note to all of this is making sure we mention Dave Johnson's art.
Yes, I have a note down to talk about that as well.
I feel like sometimes we give artists kind of a short shrift in some of these conversations, not all the time. But I feel like Dave Johnson, of course, is most well known now for his incredible covers.
Yes.
I don't know if he even does any interior art anymore. I tried to look up and see if there was other interior art in recent years. And all I see is covers. And the covers are great. I think he did the 100 Bullets covers, all of them, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those are great.
Correct. You could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was Dave Johnson that did all those covers.
He specifically uses in Red Sun, he specifically uses a style that invokes the Russian propaganda posters. Yep. and that that constructivism style that was
right.
You know, that's heavily influenced by Russian style.
And I mean, he's one of those artists that you really wish had done more interior work. And we're lucky to have him, you know, doing the covers. You know, it's quite dynamic, and the color scheme used as well is very interesting. The reds, whites, and blues are used very cleverly and prominently.
You know, first of all, the Superman shield with the hammer and sickle is really cool.
Yeah.
Say what you will about what the Soviet Union really was, they had cool iconography.
Yeah. Yeah, Superman, he looks more of a badass than the American Superman in some ways.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into the underwear inside or, you know, outside of the pants, but, you know, it's a pretty great suit.
And, yeah, it really is. And even Wonder Woman, I like how she adopts the more Russian style, the Soviet style. Because, you know, she comes to America, meets Superman, she's all in red, white, and blue.
Right.
But now this time she's sort of siding with Russia. And she has more reds and the deeper blues. That's a cool uniform as well.
And it, you know, these a lot of so the Batman, the Russian Batman, has been featured in other comics going forward. As has the Superman. It's one of the multiverses, right? I can't remember which multiverse Red Sun exists, but Red Sun does exist, which is interesting. That Grant Morrison, who is no pal of Mark Miller anymore, included the world of Red Sun in one of his multiverses.
Yes, I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, I don't off the top of my head. It's Supergirl last season referenced Red Sun, only it was Supergirl and not Superman.
Yeah, in the crossover, right?
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah.
So it this is definitely an influential work for sure, and it does go beyond the simple, you know, what if Superman but evil. Because there is a much more nuanced depiction of Superman, even when he's doing bad things.
Overall, I mean, I think this is a very good comic. I think it's one of the more enjoyable Superman stories I've read. We both have quibbles, and I'm not sure that it is a perfect comic by any stretch of the imagination. This did not change my mind about All-Star Superman, which I think I had mentioned earlier as well.
Yep.
But it's good comics overall, and it's a fun premise that had kind of existed as an idea before, but I think Mark Miller pretty much is going to own this particular premise now. I think that, yeah. I would be surprised if another writer can do a better job.
No, I doubt it. They'll just kind of play off of what he's already established.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I agree. It is a simple, you know, provocative premise, an ingenious idea. Overall, I mean, yes, I'm a little confused by what the message is, but overall, absolutely, I would recommend this. I think people should for sure read it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we could add a bunch of other things on, but people have to get on with their days.
We could consider this comic Red Sun.
Oh, man. If you're Stalin, how could you be Russian?
That's a classic. All right. So that was Red Sun.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want to know what we're going to do next time?
I was just about to ask. So today we did, Paul, today we did my recommendation. So I believe you're on the hot seat for the next round. Would you like to tell us what comic we'll be reading for the next exciting edition of The Collected Edition?
Yes, on an all-new episode of The Collected Edition. You know what? Because of our haphazard recording schedule the past couple of months and, you know, the end of the summer here, we completely missed the Disney D3 convention, where a lot of interesting things were announced that Disney's going to be rolling out, one of which is a Moon Knight TV series, which is I think very fascinating, which got me reading some old Moon Knight stuff, and that leads me into what our next recommendation is, which is going to be Moon Knight Volume 1 From the Dead, written by Warren Ellis, with art by Declan Chauvelet. This is from 2014. It was a reboot of sorts for the character. And it's Warren Ellis, which we haven't done a Warren Ellis comic before.
Which is shocking.
It is shocking. 2 years of this and no Warren Ellis. I think it's warranted at this point.
Certainly is.
And we're going to try to do that entire thing without saying Marvel Batman.
Oh, man.
Well, we got to come up with, come on, we're intelligent guys. We can come up with a different description other than Marvel Batman.
Okay, Marvel Nightwing.
See, that was really easy.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Okay, so that's it. So thank you all for listening. We do appreciate your feedback and your comments. And on this comic, I'd love to hear what people think about Red Sun. So please send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or hit us up on Twitter, Collected Ed Pod, that's Collected ED Pod, or go to our website and leave a comment on the individual episode. And I guess that's it. So thanks again for listening. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter @CollectedEdPod, that's Collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?